This week's mailbag comes to us from Rana. Sunday basket for the win. My husband is buying a new car and doing a trade-in. So he comes to me 10 minutes before he has to leave, asking where all of the paperwork is for the old car. Now, because I have been sorting all of our papers for when I get my binders, I was able to right away get him the papers that he needed. I want to just say thank you to Lisa Woodruff and the Sunday Basket Club for making that possible.
Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started.
Well, I have a very special guest today on the Organized 365 podcast. I don't often have guests on the Friday podcast, but I tell you what, I cannot do what I'm doing now inside of Organized 365 without Sarah Dyson. So I want to introduce you to and have a conversation about who Sarah is and what we're doing here in Organized 365 and the research that we are doing now and into the future. So Sarah, our new lead Organized 365 researcher, welcome to the Organized 365 podcast.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you so much.
Well, I would love for you to start, like I ask everyone, how in the world did you find me? How did you find Organized 365?
Well, like similar listeners have discussed, I was at a point in life that I needed you and I sought to find you. So in 2014, I found Organized 365. I was looking for a way to manage multiple tasks at one time. So I was starting a new business. I had a home and my mother was moving in with me all at the same time. And I was having a problem juggling all that. I was very frazzled. So despite all of my project management skills, I was still struggling to balance these things. And I felt like I needed a human interaction or human guidance right here, right now. And I did a swift Google search and I ran across you. You presented yourself as an authentic, trustworthy, reputable person that has been there, been in the forefront of these stressors and disasters. And I jumped in your boat. That's what I felt like. So, and I have been riding along with you since 2014.
Well, I didn't realize it was that long ago. Like that's like basically before I even started the podcast, I think.
I ran across your website and then I started listening to you and reading all of your material.
And Sarah has read it all. Like you're like Mary. So I connected you and Mary and we actually had an after hours conversation and cocktail, which is so fun. And you and Mary both like understand the Organized 365 audience and the dilemma that Organized 365 solves from a more analytical academic aspect than I do. I do from a woman who just got life got carried away and I solved my own problem because I'm a teacher. But both you and Mary have a different way of looking at problems, solutions to problems, and really finding root causes of problems and how one situation and another situation can be connected specifically through research and data. So can you tell me and tell the audience a little bit more about your background and your passion in general for research?
My passion with research is that it provides evidence to solve almost any problem there is. It's the process of finding that evidence that I find to be a terrific challenge. It's just as you like completing jigsaw puzzles. I like that hunt. So it is an Easter egg hunt, per se, to find your solution, to find that evidence. And I have that passion. And whenever you, I don't know, it's just that you have all of these systems in place that evidence supports. And my passion is finding that evidence to support the answer to the problem.
So it's kind of like when we're in eighth grade and we're doing a science experiment, like we think we know the answer, but then we have to really test it and see if that was truly the answer or if that was just anecdotal evidence and not actually like this cause creates this result. Like right. For like layman's terms like me, Sarah, is that what you're saying?
Yes, there is pretty much a cause and effect to everything. And it's remarkable how the research itself is able to show that.
Okay, so you had been listening to the podcast possibly since before there even was a podcast. And you were listening back in the fall of 2020 when I shared my 3-year vivid vision in episode number 365. And you waited a week or two and then you reached out to me. What was it in that episode that you heard? And how did you reach out? And what did you think would come of that?
Well, when I heard the podcast, my first thought was, wow, this is a Shark Tank episode, because I love Shark Tank and I love how they put everything and all those details together. But it reminded me of how innovative and remarkable that you are with how you do your processes. So you had thought everything out, you created these goals for yourself and you accomplished them. And as I continued to listen, I was thinking about research, and I had a conversation with someone almost right after I listened to that podcast. And I was sharing the fact that you have these wonderful systems and that empirical research should be conducted to show that Lisa's systems work. She is absolutely right. She's spot on with this. So she's doing it, and she can go so far, and it could be this global, let's call it a global process for everyone to endure and have it impact their lives. And a little bit later, I had another conversation. I was like, should I reach out to her? She's going to say no. She doesn't. She's already doing it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to reach out. And it was 5:30 in the morning, and because I had gotten up at 4:30, and I was like, I should email this. There was just something that was nagging, you know, so I did. And I thanked you for your services and what you have provided me and a clear, simplistic view, because whenever you read research papers, it's a lot of big words, a lot of big terms, but yes. You break things down in a very logical manner that it cuts it. It's very clear cut, right? And I, whenever at the time I needed you and those services, you provided it, you came through. So I was thinking that your systems could be shown to the population. It would be amazing. So I reached out to you and offered my services for my PhD and research background to get this done.
And you have no idea, but that's exactly what I wanted. Like when I created episode 364 and 365, I was sharing like where Organized 365 was in the first 9 years in business and where I saw it going in the next 3 years in business. And specifically, like the first 3 years in business, I was just trying to figure out how to make money. And then the next 3 years in business, I was figuring out how do you take home organization and create it into a digital course. And then the last 3 years, I was creating the physical products that supported that and creating true employees in a real warehouse with real infrastructure and a real team. But the next 3 years of Organized 365 are almost not in my control. Like I can think about them and I can cast vision for them, but I don't have the skills to bring those to fruition on my own, nor does the team that we have in Cincinnati. We just have a great foundation and the supports for what we believe is coming. And so if you haven't listened to episode 365, I really paint the vision of what 3 years from now Organized 365 probably will look like, but I don't know fully how that will happen. So one of the things I committed to was conducting third-party research. So we've hired another company to do research, and I want to do research every single year. But to be honest, all I know how to do is write a check and say, I want to do this research and this research doesn't exist. And Sarah, I was hoping and praying that someone would say, I know how to do research. And I'm so grateful that you raised your hand, because the research I was doing was from a business perspective, and it was true empirical research with the goal of media and to promote business, once you stepped in, before we even started the process, you changed the questions, you created an IRB, and you made it so that the research that we did not only is going to be great for media and statistics and all the things that I wanted it for, but it actually is, you know, statistically accurate and empirical data that can be used in academia as well, which was beyond any of my hopes or dreams for this. And I say that because you may have an idea that you feel like you're being called to take the first step to bring to the world, to bring to light, but you don't know how to do it. I just say, like, take the first step, and the people and supports that you need will present themselves. Who is it that says, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear? Oh, I don't know who, it's not my quote. I don't remember whose quote it is, but it's like that. Like, when you have a clear vision of where you can go in the future, but you don't know all of the people and the processes and the things that you need, start sharing your dream. And then people like Sarah will email you. I mean, I went, yes, like out loud like that when I saw your email in my email inbox, and you're like, oh, I don't know. Like, and I think that same day I was like, when can we meet?
And we had coffee shortly after that. And that coffee conversation ran into the question of, I think you made the statement, you need to join the team. And I was like, well, I never knew this conversation would lead to that, but I'd be grateful to. I would be very happy to. Mm-hmm. So here we are today.
So here you are. You're like, okay, not only is Lisa going to do this research, but I truly, like, I can shape and craft this, and she's on the right track, but really, if we did this over here, it would be so much different. Can you share, like, in general, for people who have not done research like me, what makes a study an academic study? What are the things we need to have? How did you put those in place for what we're doing?
Well, there's a few things that we need to make a study truly academic, reputable, and valid. So the first thing we would need is the IRB, which the IRB is also known as the Institutional Review Board or Ethics Committee, which is a formal board at most academic and governmental institutions such as universities, the FDA, and the NIH. These boards are designed to review, approve, and monitor all research regarding human participants. So the IRB also assures that appropriate steps and measures have been taken to protect the rights and welfare of the human participants as subjects in the research study. This equally pertains to participants, even if they are simply completing a survey. The reason for that is that the IRB ensures that questions are not leading and whether the participant could encounter harmful effects if the questions are intrusive or bring up unpleasant feelings. So the IRB monitors those, and systems need to be put in place if those things happen. The IRB also protects what is considered vulnerable populations. So that is children, anyone from 0 to 18, and then those 65 and older. So that means it's a lot easier and it's more reputable and professional to not survey those two vulnerable groups. There's other vulnerable groups such as prisoners and that are institutionalized. So you don't want to necessarily consider those in a survey such as this, just to make sure that everything is above board and reaches ethical standards. The second thing that you would most we need is a literature review to make it sound and to have a clear problem statement, have a clear research question, and then create and construct our survey. Okay, in this case, our survey was already constructed for us because we are using third-party data from CGK. However, with the problem statement and the research questions, those are formulated through a literature review. So the literature review is a concise, synthesized review of the literature, and it's also current. So it needs to be within the past year to really hone in on what has been done, what hasn't been done, and where are the gaps in the literature. So what is it that other researchers have told the public in their articles that things need to be done and elaborated on more? Where are the needs that need to be filled?
Yeah. So when you say that IRB, first of all, Mary, who does all the content, you guys know Mary. she was so excited that when you secured an IRB for our research, and then Mary and I had to take, I don't know if it was considered a course or a certification, in order to see my own data, you had me take a course so that I followed the IRB. I had to take a class to see my own stuff. That's really cool. And then the problem statement, like I knew what I wanted to search in the survey, and we'll talk about how we came up with questions, but the literature review that you completed, like we had the coffee and then you had like the literature review done a week later. And the literature review is actually in a second review and will eventually be published. You can find out everything about what we're doing at organize365.com/research. You can find out where we got our IRB. As we publish things, they will be there. I know we're going to have a poster published, you said, and our literature review will be published. And there are other papers that are already in the works. So you'll be able to see those things there. But you got so excited. Like you already knew the research needed to happen. But after you did the literature review, you're like, oh my goodness, there is so much that we could research and so little research that actually has been done on the head of household in a home in America. Like there just is very little true research that has been done on that specific issue, especially if you take the childcare out. Like if you talk about childcare, there's a little bit more, but just strictly people living in a home in America, not a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
That is absolutely true. The literature review revealed that women working outside of the home have a negative emotional spillover into both their workplaces and their home due to the stressors that are coming from the home. And those stressors turned out to be lack of organization, lack of productivity in the home. So research already tells us that. So how do we fix that? We do more research on it, and then inevitably we offer a solution. And Lisa, you have that solution. And it's remarkable that you have created that all of these programs. And these programs are systems that you put into place, are the solutions that can be offered to the population, to the reader of this article.
Okay, so thank you, Sarah. So we did use a third-party research company. We used CGK. It's the Center for Genetics, it's Jason Dorsey's company. So they did all of our study and we started doing their questions. And when we set up to do the questions again, here, I'm just like, so I'm going to make a survey of these questions that I want people to answer. And then we'll have the data. And Sarah's like, no, no, no. So Sarah, how do we create proper survey questions? And then I didn't realize like literally every single word inside of your survey question, if it's not like the word cat, you have to define it. Like I didn't realize we'd have to do all these definitions in addition to our survey questions.
Right. The reason for the definitions is that people don't understand or know what tasks of daily living are. They don't know what the Sunday basket is. So in the with the participants with CGK, they had no clue. So we had to elaborate on those things. Otherwise, we leave the participant to their own devices, you know, to make judgment calls on what is this. And if they don't know, they won't be able to answer the question properly. That was the reason behind those definitions.
And specifically, when we were talking about like you would never say, does blah, blah, blah affect your mental health? Because mental health is not a definition, but anxiety and depression are. Like, I remember you saying that to me, or like motivation. Also, if you say motivation, we had to define what motivation meant. Like, it's not just Sunday basket. Obviously, people aren't going to know what a Sunday basket is, but it's also like other words that you think you know what the definition, but truly from an academia standpoint, mental health is not something you just ask about in a survey.
Right, because mental health is too broad. It's a very broad term. It's used in different ways, like you said. So yes, we did hone in on very specific words so the participant would truly understand how to answer the question best. Mm-hmm. And the data that we wanted back, we wanted to answer our problem statement and research question. So once we created our problem statement, that was after the literature review, we were able to create the problem statement and then create, how many do we have? Two research questions that we can answer with that survey data.
Okay. So this, we went back and forth. So you may not know me because inside of my company, I have great ideas. And then luckily I surround myself with these awesome people who love to take those ideas from my idea over the finish line. So I said, Sarah, sounds like you know what we want here. Can you just kind of work on these questions? And then when they came back, I was like, Sarah, what do you think about those edits? Any more edits we need, Sarah? And so you would keep working on them for me and I'd keep reading them. I was like, yeah. And they were getting better and better. And of course, I signed up on our own questions, but I could have never done this without you, Sarah. Like the study I would have done would have been good, would have been newsworthy, would have been impactful for people. The study I did with you is going to possibly change the world. Like you took this study to a whole different level and I can't thank you enough for that. As we were doing this, like question number, I think it was like question number two was about housework and we're defining all these words. And said, and so he says, does housework? And like, we were asking these questions and you guys skipped over the word housework. And I said, well, how are we going to define housework?
Yes.
And so they're on the line, you're on the line, I'm on the line. And I'm like, oh my gosh, it's never been defined before. Like just listening to this podcast, I want you to think in your head, what do you think the definition of housework is? Like I'm thinking 1950s, like character from a sitcom is what I'm thinking in my head. And so I realized there was no definition of housework. So while Sarah worked on all the other questions, I realized that really what we were uncovering was there, you know, the book Fair Play by Eve Rodsky talks about the mental load. And we've defined that there are different things that specifically weigh on whoever is the head of household that is trying to orchestrate all of those things that go in the household. And what I remember just verbally processing in front of all of you was that just like there are four kinds of work in business, and I equated those to the four kinds of work back in the fall of 2020 in the house, there are four different ways to look at housework. The first is obvious, and I think comes to everyone's mind immediately, and that is the cleaning of a house. And I define the cleaning associated with housework as anything that a cleaning company would do. So if you hired a cleaning company, whether you do or not, but you hired a cleaning company, they would vacuum, they would dust, they would clean the kitchen, they would clean the toilets, they would do those things. That is cleaning. The second thing that I think anybody who owns a house would recognize as housework is maintenance. Anything related to painting, fixing, adding on to, you know, anything related to, if you're a property manager, this kind of work associated with the house would be yours. If you rent your house, you don't have maintenance work. Your landlord has maintenance work. So those are two kinds of housework. The third kind of housework is one that I don't think many people think about, and I think is the root problem of housework. And that is what I am calling tasks of daily living. And I got this definition, tasks of daily living, from the Social Security Administration. So the Social Security Administration has a list of things that are of the person. Like a person has to be able to feed themselves, clothe themselves, bathe themselves in order to not meet the Social Security definition of needing assistance from the government for those tasks of daily living. And when you need assistance from the government for a certain number of tasks of daily living, then you can go on Social Security disability. And I thought, you know what? That is a definition of housework. Stay with me. Because what I observed in my own life and in the lives of my friends is that when you decide to cohabitate, whether you get married or not, when you have roommates, when you cohabitate, sometimes you decide to assign your own tasks of daily living to someone else in the household for cost savings, time savings, productivity, convenience, just who's home at the house at what time is when they get these responsibilities. So one person will cook for everyone in the house. One person will do laundry for everyone in the house. One person will whatever. Well, doing your laundry and feeding yourself and grocery shopping are all tasks of daily living. Like you have to do them no matter where you live, no matter what age you are. But when we cohabitate, and then when we add little children to the cohabitation, the amount of tasks of daily living that get concentrated into one person gets more and more. And that concentration of the tasks of daily living is not in It's not cleaning. Like, you can't hire somebody to do it. It's not maintenance. It's not related to the house that you live in. It's related to the people that you live with. And having taken on most of those tasks of daily living for most of the people that live with me in my house, what I realized as those little kids became independent adults still living in the house is that I had a hard time getting the tasks of daily living off of my personhood and back onto the now four adults that live in my house. And I thought that is part of this housework. The housework that needs to be done is actually independent of the humans that are living inside of each house, but it gets consolidated into less people in the house for convenience, for need, for cost savings, because they're little kids and they can't do it themselves or for whatever reason. So that's the third kind of work. And then the fourth kind of work is organization. And organization is not cleaning, it's not maintenance, it's not tasks of daily living. It's really more taking the time to prioritize, to organize, and to increase productivity in your home. It's completely optional. So that's how we defined those four kinds of work. And I will be expounding on those in additional podcasts, and you'll be hearing about them a lot. But before we even got started with the research, Sarah, we realized that we uncovered a huge deficit in our understanding of the tasks of the head of household because we didn't have good definitions for what they were even doing.
Yes, your definitions have really broadened the scope of not only the study, but like you said, your operations there. It's just, it's amazing what research can do and offer you and the things that you don't know that you need.
Yeah, I remember as we were coming up with this, and now, so this is the first time you're hearing these definitions inside of the podcast. You'll be hearing them more and more. Sarah and I have been talking this language for like 4 or 5 months. And we're like, that's another task of daily living. That's another way that you divide it out. Like, now we can't unsee it. But before that, like, we had never considered it that way before.
Yes. It's a great compartmentalizing way to see the different tasks and the different roles that people play. It's, if you were to set them up on a board game as game pieces, I think that would be kind of interesting to see how that played out as well. You can make a board game.
Well, and I think, again, I already mentioned Eve Rodsky's book, Fair Play, and that's kind of what she did. Like, she has these 100 tasks that she determined are happening inside of the house, and you can like deal your cards over and over again about who's going to do one tasks inside of the household. There are a lot of childcare related tasks, and her point of view is from being overwhelmed with children and then wanting to go back into the workforce. You know, more than 50% of the people in the Organized 365 audience either don't have children or don't have children living at home. And I'm terrible with the research, but I believe in our sample population, that was true as well. Like, more than half did not have children at home or did not have children. And so this is not a childcare issue. Like, my research that I just did and the 100-day program that we have is a head of household living in a house issue, regardless of whether or not you have children. And I think that most of the research you uncovered, Sarah, when they got to this household issue, eventually worked around to, okay, and kids. Like, there, it was a kid's focus.
Yes, kids were, they weren't in the picture a whole lot. Even in the research that I pulled, the literature, kids were not in focus. It was primarily just either two people in the head of household. So that's the task or the roles, or say, were divided or supposedly divided between the two individuals. However, in most cases, they were not. And that came, it came down to the gender roles and how they were being it depicted between the two individuals. And that would, that I found that to be quite interesting and how it hasn't changed. So you're looking at a stagnant of gender roles over the past 40 years, really. They haven't changed. Yet we have, our society has changed in 40 years. Our technology has advanced. It's become very innovative. We have robots in the home. They sweep and mop our floor. Yet we are still not, we still have a lack of accomplishment in our home. And then it's also due to that lack of accomplishment that depression and anxiety is so overwhelming between the head of households. So that's an area of our research that we will be it will be revealed during the publication process. But I just found it quite interesting that that is where one of the major gaps are in the literature.
Yeah, and I identified that a couple of years ago when we talked about Maslow's hierarchy of needs and how when everyone gets the flu in the house, all of a sudden you're back down to level one and okay, we need safety and security, and we have food and we need shelter. Okay, now we're getting up to the next level. It's so hard to reach the higher levels of self-actualization inside of that pyramid, whereas at work, stage one and stage two are provided by the office and the employer. Of course, now the pandemic, people are like, I don't know how safe I feel, but you are. I mean, any employer who's bringing you back into the office is doing everything inside of their power to make sure that you have a safe and healthy and productive work environment to come back to. Like, they're working with you on that so that you can come in and reach your self-actualized goals at work. It's much harder to do that at home.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to share, Sarah? I know we're not sharing any of our findings yet, but we have plenty to share. I know once we got the statistics back and we were going over them, like Sarah and I, our eyes got as big as saucers and our jaws were on the floor. We're like, oh my goodness, this is so much research. It's going to take us like 2 years to get all of this out. And in a digestible way, we just received so much good information to pass on. Anything else you wanted to share that we realized before we did the study, after we did the study, ways in which you plan on releasing this information over the next year?
Sure. I think you've already mentioned about the literature review, and that's coming out shortly, hopefully within the next 30, 45 days. And then the next article will be the one that we're kind of touching on now, is in regards to the depression and the anxiety and the overwhelmingness of the head of household. So that one will be coming out hopefully by the end of June, early July.
That's about when this podcast will come out, end of June.
Okay. If not the end of June, then we may have to roll over into September. It just really depends when the publications date come up for the journal. But as soon as we are approved for publication, then we can provide more information to the listeners. The next articles are probably going to be in a series of literature reviews in addition to the findings that we have. And those are going to pertain to motivation and to ways in which tasks of daily living incorporate into our work lives. So in entrepreneurship, for one. So if you're working at home, we got a lot of information, very good information from women working at home and also men, and how the women would work, the women who currently use Organize 365 products as compared to women who do not. So I think that information is valid.
Okay, let me stop you there. Let me tell you guys a little bit more about the research that we didn't really share. So we oversampled women in our survey. So our survey was for people who are 25 to 65, is that right, Sarah? 25 to 65 years old,
yes.
Matched the U.S. Census. So we ended up with a lot of millennials because 25 to like whatever the end of that millennial range was, we hit almost all the millennials, but we stopped our survey at the age of 65 instead of like baby boomers go all the way until in the 70s. Because like Sarah said, based on our IRB, that's a protected class. And so we could not survey people over the age of 65. So we have millennials, Gen X, baby boomers, an even amount of men and women, all ethnicities, different income levels, different family makeups, all of those things that match the U.S. Census were in that study. I think there were 1,011 people in that part of the study. Or 1,014, 1,015.
1,115.
Okay. And then we added on another 500 women. And the reason why we added on another 500 women, because then we had a female, we could then take the female answers and still have more than 1,000 respondents, which would give us a statistical relevant group in order to draw any conclusions from. Is that correct, Sarah?
Yes.
Make sure I'm saying it correctly. Then after we were done with our research and we conducted that, I think it was like February timeframe of 2021. Then we took the same exact questions that we had asked in that study that CGK did and Organize 365, put it in SurveyMonkey, and we did it with our Organize 365 community. So So what Sarah's talking about there is she's comparing the survey results from people in the organized 365 community to the survey results done by CGK in the general population who have never heard of organized 365. And now we're doing a comparison of those two surveys. Like, we've done like three surveys basically in one. So that's what she's talking about when she says those different things. And everything Sarah's talking about publishing, she's talking about publishing in academia, in journals, at conferences, not through the Organized 365 podcast and website. I will be producing a PDF with a lot of this data. It'll be easy for you to digest. It'll come out next week. That's what we're going to publish on the podcast next week. You'll be able to download it and share it. We're also creating a piece specifically for media around everything we found out about paper, because a whole section of this study was just about paper organization. What are all the statistics only related to paper organization, related to anything referenced in the paper solution book? And so that is going to become a white paper that we release to media. You will also be able to find that at organize365.com/research as well. What else do you have up your sleeve, Sarah? I have to like, she literally has, she's given me the bullet pointed list. I think it's 30 different things she wants to do with this research and future research.
Yeah. Do you want me to talk about future research, Lisa?
Sure. You can talk about future research, clinical studies that you desire to do. Like, we have lots of ideas.
Okay.
Hey, Sarah, if we share, maybe there's somebody listening who's like, ooh, we want to help participate or conduct that.
Yes.
Never know who's listening.
Yes, that is true. So there's another study in the works. So we do not have IRB approval, but it's under review at this time for the study conducted at NYIT, which is the New York Institute of Medicine. So we will be surveying. Well, actually, it's not really a survey. So it's more of a qualitative study. So we're going to be interviewing these participants on a regular basis. These participants are going to be second and third year medical students. They're going for their doctorate of osteopath. So they're DO students, more or less. And what we're trying to determine is whether or not Lisa's products will help them stay organized, on track, because they are young adults coming, living their lives as an individual. And in most cases, it is for the first time being away from home. So what they have run into is a lot of barriers with living their lives, especially the ones who have been diagnosed with ADHD. So these students are set up, they're intelligent students, but in some cases they do and have failed due to this diagnosis. And their failing points have been due to the lack of organization in their overall lives, not one particular area. So what we would like to do is have two groups, one that is currently diagnosed with ADHD and the other one who is not. And we also want to compare those groups with the help of Lisa's products. And this is a new study. It does not necessarily have anything to do with the data that we've currently collected, although the data that we did collect tells us that this is probably the right way to go. Inevitably, this study will take quite a while to do. We're looking at probably 2022 before it can actually get published, but it is very exciting to know that it's going in this direction. It's going to impact this population.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're super excited about this one, I have to say. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, Sarah. She's like, oh yeah, they're very excited.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We won't share all of our secrets, but that one is definitely one that we are working very hard to get approved. Every time we hit a roadblock, I'm like, well, let's try this. Because I'm not in academia. I do have some unique solutions to IRB approval that they haven't thought of before. They're like, oh, that might work. Like, how do we make things really double blinded so that Sarah doesn't know and I don't know and nobody knows? So it's been a really, really fun process. I will say, it was probably, and you probably remember this, Sarah, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, I said that I wanted to get a PhD in clinical psychology.
Yes.
And my friend who has a doctorate said, no, you don't. She said, no, you wouldn't. It's a lot of papers. I was like, yeah, but can I have like an assistant help me write these? She's like, no, you cannot. I was like, oh. She said, no, you don't want to. And what I realized was if I had stopped everything to get my PhD, about a year from now, I would be done And instead, what I did is I kept podcasting and I kept creating and I kept talking. And now the things I would have been able to do with a cognitive psychology PhD, you guys are doing them for me.
Yeah, we're getting it done. Yeah.
It's so exciting. So exciting. And I just get to do exactly what I wanted to do 4 years ago, which was say, this is the next thing I want to research. This is the next thing I want to research. This is the next thing I want to research. And then we're just doing the research. That's what I wanted to do, was the research around the head of household. And one of the things I've been doing very cognizantly recently is not saying female head of household or primary head of household, because what we uncovered in our research is it's not a male-female issue. Everybody, like society, has brought to light that this is not a singular sex issue. However, when you go behind closed doors, there are a lot of differences between men and women, and we need to bring those to light. Like, we need to open the door, look at it, talk about how it got to be this way, think about it, define it, and then close the door again so that we can kind of have more gender equity and equality behind the doors that we have also as soon as you walk out of your home into all of the other places that we have that gender equity and equality now. And I'm super excited about having these discussions. And our results shows that millennial men especially are very engaged and interested in this discussion. They want to know more. They want to do more. They want to understand. Mm-hmm. It's super exciting. Like, oh, I'm so excited about where we're going as a society and with our research in general.
I agree. It is very interesting. It is very exciting. One thing that I think society today lacks is a true, well, let's back up. 1970s, you had guidebooks for everything. This is how you run a house. This is how you cook. This is how you do it.
Yes.
There's no guidebook today. And there's really nothing to help the generations of today how to live together cohabitationally and successfully. You know, how do you have those hard conversations, let alone how do you organize and make the time to have those conversations? So literature actually brought those concepts up, that despite the gender issues, there is a deficit in the conversations themselves alone.
So good, Sarah, because like 86% say of that study said that organization is a learnable skill. 86%. But then where do you go to learn the skill? Like, not decluttering, organizing. Where do you go to learn the skill of organizing? And when you listen to Milana's podcast that came out end of May, beginning of June, and she talked about the launch binder, which is what we're talking about in that NYIT study that we're trying to do. She said, myself, all the people on the dorm floor with me, my friends back at home, were like, this is the guide. These are all the questions we have about adulting. These are all the things we don't even know how to ask. This is how to budget, how to do the meal planning, how to do the cleaning, when to do the cleaning. She's like, this is all of the answers I've been looking for all in one place. So yeah, full circle moment for me there, Sarah. It seems like, you know, you do all these little things in isolation. I just feel like it's all coming together in one big package with a bow on the top here in 2021, that by the end of 2021, we'll be like, oh yeah, here's the research. And here's what you do when you are a young adult and your first house. And it's all there. We just don't have it in that package with a bow on it yet.
Yes. Yes. But it will be.
Yeah. Well, I'm so glad you all got to meet Sarah Dyson, and she is our lead organized 365 researcher. If you have clinical trials that you would like to run with us, or research ideas, and you're a researching institution or in academia and you want any more information, just send an email to Lisa at organized365.com. We will review it, and we'll get Sarah in the loop on that. So Sarah, thank you again for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Lisa. It's wonderful to be here.